So today we're going to be talking about a few basic fundamentals of nutrition and hopefully unravel some of the misinformation that's out there all throughout the years, you know, about what is healthy and what isn't. We need to know why a food is nutritious or not so that we'll know when we hear something if it's right, you know, because you know, first people ate eggs. For centuries, people ate eggs. And then they come along and say, oh, don't eat eggs. You know, and so then we stopped eating eggs. And what happened? Well, memory issues and dementia skyrocketed and cholesterol didn't do anything. It didn't go down. It didn't help it at all. So then now they come back and say, hey, studies show eating eggs don't hurt you after all. So go ahead and eat your eggs. And so it's like, you know, we need to just know how to determine when we hear some of these things if it's good information or not. And common sense dictates much of this. If God made it and meant it to be food, then I suspect that it's okay to eat no matter what anybody else says. And the first thing that comes to mind on that is margarine. You know, a man-made food, a chemically altered man-made food, and we're going to tell people stop eating butter and eat margarine? Well, how smart was that? But what did we do? We did it. And, you know, when margarine scales went up, butter sales plummeted, but guess what else went up? Heart disease skyrocketed at the same rate that margarine sales increase and butter sales plummeted. How could butter be the problem of heart disease? No one was eating it. They were all eating this fake man-made fat that's chemically altered.
It was made to fatten up turkeys wouldn't eat it.
Oh, I didn't know that. It was made to fatten up turkeys, but the turkeys wouldn't eat it. And in fact, it wouldn't catch on for a while until they started adding yellow food color to make it look a little more like butter. And then people would start buying it, but they didn't. So it's like, yeah, let's make something chemically altered and add food color to it, and then we'll eat it. That's food. Yeah, well, that makes sense. So nutrition means to nourish, and it's, you know, we just need to nourish our bodies with all of the essential nutrients that God designed us to need. And when I say the word essential in front of a word, whether essential fatty acids or essential amino acids, when I say the word essential in front of something, that means that you have to supply it from your diet because your body cannot make it. So it has to come from your food or from supplements. Now, there are 45 essential nutrients that we absolutely have to have in order to be healthy, but there are actually over 90 nutrients we need to be healthy, but again, your body can make the rest of them if you have the 45 essential ones present. Now, I like to think of each nutrient that we need as ingredients in a pie. So I've drawn this little chart here, if I can get this to go up. I wish that would go further, but oh well. So I've made a pie here. Let's just pretend we're eating a cherry pie, okay? So we need all the ingredients, right, to make a cherry pie. So what we have are these are the things that we need to get in our diet so that we'll be healthy. Protein is number one. Carbohydrates and fats. Now these three nutrients are called macronutrients. Macro means large, so that means you need a lot of them. Then we have water, and then over here we have vitamins, minerals, phytochemicals, and enzymes. And all of these are what we call micronutrients, meaning you need a small amount of them. Now, it doesn't mean they're less important. It just means you don't need as large amounts of them. But they are nevertheless just as important. And now these here are what we call our fuel. This is fuel for the body. This is where you're going to get your energy. These don't necessarily particularly give you energy, but if you're deficient in any of them, then it's going to affect your ability to take these and make energy out of them. So yes, you will feel tired if you don't take them, and you could feel energy if you do take them. But they don't necessarily give you energy. They're not your fuel. So of the vitamins, we have let's kind of go over some of these. Protein, we have 8 essential amino acids. Now, there's actually 24 amino acids, but you only have to have 8. Your body can make the rest out of the 8. Then you have carbohydrates. So we have simple and complex carbohydrates. We kind of covered that a little bit the week we talked about sugar. Complex are your vegetables and grains, and simple are more fruits and things like that. So then fats, we have 2 different kinds of fats. We have saturated fat and we have unsaturated fat. Vitamins, we have, there's 15 essential vitamins. Minerals, we need 20. And in minerals, we have it's called your macro minerals and your trace minerals. So again, macro means they're big, like we need 1,000 milligrams or more of them. A trace means we only need little amounts. But again, never believe that they're not just as important. You just only need a little amount of them. Also on the vitamins, there are water-soluble and fat-soluble vitamins. Does anybody know what the water-soluble vitamins are? B-complex and C? Yes. Anybody know what the fat-soluble ones are? A, E, and D, and K. Okay. So, let's see. And then hopefully if we have time, we'll cover phytochemicals. I don't know that we're going to have time today, but we'll see. Okay, so again, when I say the word essential, again, that means you've got to get it in your diet or through supplements. Your body cannot produce it. Now, there are some people who cannot convert and make things like they should. Diabetics, people with liver problems have problems taking these essential nutrients and making the others. So really, you just need to make sure you're getting all of them from your diet as much as is possible. Now, we judge what's in a food we eat by what's in the food we eat, okay? Does it have these things in it? So there's a term we call nutrient dense, which means for all the calories that food has, it's got a lot of nutrition. It's just packed with vitamins and minerals and protein and fats. But then something that we would call an empty calorie is someone, you know, you have all these calories but no food, no nutrition. And so we want to stay away from those. You know, and this nutrient density in a food is far more important. It gives a truer picture of what that food is to us, why we need it. Some people get so wrapped up in, you know, is it fat-free? Is it cholesterol-free? Is it sugar-free? Is it salt-free? That we don't ask, is it nutrition-free? You know, we can take nuts, for instance, walnuts, pecans, almonds. People say, oh, well, you got to keep those to a minimum because they've got fat in them. But they're not, you know, but they're a powerhouse of nutrition, too. So don't worry so much about the fat. Worry about whether it's nutrient-dense. Does it have a lot of nutrition for its calories? Again, food is your body's fuel. Are you putting in the high-octane fuel to get you down the road, or are you putting in junk food, like those 750 donuts we talked about the average American eats, and 150 pounds of sugar, 40 gallons of soft drinks, and stuff like that? Well, yeah, coffee goes in there. So, you know, there have been a lot of government studies done over the last 30 to 40 years that have all come to a single conclusion. Now, that's amazing for any study to come to a single conclusion, let alone over a period of 30 to 40 years. But they have all come to a general singular conclusion that the diets we now consume in the U.S., which are made of 42% of our calories from fat and 25% from sugar, are diets that contribute to the relative increase in risk of degenerative diseases. And Joe just sent me an email this morning about a recent study that was done, so I want to tell you about it because it's really amazing. So this was a study that was recently published in the JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, and it said diet indeed plays a major role in increasing a person's risk of dying from heart disease, stroke, or diabetes, collectively referred to as cardiometabolic killers. And that's not just a generalization. By incorporating data from several sources, including the National Health and Nutrition Examination Surveys, the National Center for Health Statistics, and findings from studies and clinical trials that link diet and disease. The research team led by Professor Renata Micha of Tufts University in Boston was able to derive the following conclusion. Among over 700,000 people who died from a cardiometabolic disease in 2012, more than 318,000 or 45% of those deaths could be linked to the patient's diets. In fact, the data shows that the number of those who died because they were not eating enough healthy food was almost comparable to the number of those who died because they were eating too much of a particularly bad food. As part of their research, the team focused on 10 dietary factors that were typically associated with cardiometabolic diseases. Fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, whole grains, processed meats, unprocessed meats, polyunsaturated fats, seafood, which has omega-3 fats, and then sugar-sweetened beverages and salt. What they found was this. Americans were under-consuming, what do you think? Fruits and vegetables and nuts and whole grains and good oils and fatty fish. And they were over-consuming or getting too much of salt, processed meats, and sugary sweetened beverages. The most number of cardiometabolic deaths was linked with eating too much salt, followed by not eating enough nuts and seeds and eating too much processed meats. The least number of deaths was linked with consuming too little polyunsaturated fats and eating too much unprocessed red meats. In terms of demographics, there were more diet-linked deaths among African Americans and Hispanics compared with non-Hispanic whites, and in terms of gender, more men than women died of dietary factors. So what do all these figures mean? In a nutshell, it suggests that in order to lower the risk of dying from a cardiometabolic disease, which are the top killers, heart disease number one, stroke, diabetes, these are all your top killers, Americans should have to do more than just eat more healthy foods. They have to eat less unhealthy foods as well. Of course, that's easier said than done, but at least if we want those statistics to change, we know where to start. And that was a study published in the JAMA. So again, our diet is really the culprit behind, you know, the diseases and the risk of dying. So, and again, these diseases include coronary artery disease, stroke, cancers, and diseases associated with high blood pressure and kidney failure. This is a remarkable change from the previous thinking that it was assumed that if you had a healthy, normal weight, and, you know, didn't have any scurvy or beriberi or rickets, you know, deficiency diseases, that you were healthy. But they're finding that's just not true, because the absence of disease does not necessarily mean that you have good health. A person may not have scurvy or beriberi, but they may not still be healthy. And I mentioned in a previous class about a chart I have. I've never brought it. But on one end, we have a white square. These are people who live in abundant health. They're never tired, you know, within reason. They don't have allergies. They're not tired. All these things. And then you get a gray area, which these people, again, their get up and go has got up and left. We call it a vertical disease. They're still walking around, but they're tired. They're slumped over. You know, they've got some health issues. They go see the doctor. They get sick with colds and flus a lot. And then you get to the darker area where they're more approaching death. And then the black is, of course, when they die. So people live in that gray area and think they're healthy, when really, no, it's the white area. But so many people live in the gray area and think they're healthy. Because they're not sick, you know, like they're able to function, but they're not in that optimal range. And that's where we want to be, is in that optimal range. Now, in a future class, I will talk about the protein, fats, and carbohydrates. But today I want to focus on the vitamins, minerals, and maybe some phytochemicals if we get time. You know, I want to talk about how important they are, their causes and symptoms of deficiencies, and why we should supplement with them. You know, our grandparents probably didn't need to take vitamins, but they grew their own food, they had their own chickens, and they had eggs in their milk, and they didn't eat junk like we do. I mean, they didn't have McDonald's to run down to. They didn't have the sugar we eat. You know, sugar was about 4 pounds per person per year instead of 150 pounds per person per year. So, of course, you know, they grew their own food. It's just a different world back then than what we have today. The chairman of the Foods Science Department at Rutgers University said that the fact is that only about 9% of Americans eat the kinds of diets that would allow them to get the full spectrum of nutrition from their food. Only 9%. And since most vitamins cannot be manufactured by the body, you must get them from your diet or supplements. Now, this doesn't mean you just eat bad and take supplements. Supplements don't replace a good diet. They never will. But I hope when we get done that you'll understand why it is important to take some supplements to supplement your diet. We've already covered how it's just not in the soil. The nutrients just aren't there the way they've depleted the soil. So we'll get to that here in a minute. But let's talk about vitamins first. So vitamins help. There's 15 known vitamins, each with their own special role to play. Vitamins help regulate the metabolism and assist the biochemical processes that release energy from the food we eat, the proteins, fats, and carbs that I mentioned. They work as coenzymes. In fact, when you take food in or vitamins, it goes to the liver to be converted into coenzymes, and that's the form the body actually uses. And then they work with enzymes to do the enzymes function. Enzymes are the workhorse of the body. They do everything, literally. They take the food you eat, they break it down to its nutritional components, and then get it to the cells and help build the tissue back up, you know. So enzymes are so important, and each vitamin has a direct role, so does minerals, sodium minerals, within each enzyme system. So when we speak of a vitamin deficiency, we mean that there is not enough of that vitamin or mineral to activate its enzymes. So each vitamin or mineral serves a different enzyme system. So let's just, if we draw a picture here. You have, like, here's an enzyme, and then here's a coenzyme. And you see how they just fit like a puzzle piece together. And if they don't fit, they don't work, then the enzymes can't do their job. So it's very important that everything work together. And this is another reason why margarine is so bad. It doesn't fit in the body. There's no place for it to go. It's been chemically altered. The molecular configuration of it is different now. It doesn't fit in the body. And so, again, it's going to mess up our body, not nourish it. And then let's take zinc, for instance. Zinc is necessary for the enzyme that activates vitamin A in the visual process. So you can have plenty of vitamin A in your body, but if you don't have enough zinc to activate the enzyme to activate the vitamin A, you can't use it. So all of these are very important to get together. So disease occurs when we don't eat the foods that contain the vitamins and minerals that make the enzyme systems work. It's known that there are 17 diseases caused by such deficiencies of vitamins. I mean, besides the obvious, scurvy, pellagra, beriberi, rickets, I believe that vitamin deficiencies play a major role in every disease. Any problem, especially stress, brings a need for more added nutrition because you use it up. You know, if someone just startles you, there went all your B vitamins. I mean, they're gone. Because they're water-soluble, the body can't store them. That's what water-soluble means. The body will excrete them in about 1 to 4 days. They're gone. Where fat-soluble, the body can't store them. And so that's better. But, you know, there are things that really deplete us. And we're going to talk about all the things that deplete us here in a minute. So long-term marginal deficiencies can create a basic physical imbalance that affects everything: our behavior, our mood, our intelligence, our performance, our resistance to disease, our recovery from illness, and our longevity. So really everything. And a recent survey by the USDA revealed that not one of 21,000 people surveyed were getting even the RDA of 10 nutrients. Not one of 21,000. And RDAs are the bare minimum, you know, to get by, to not have scurvy and stuff. So that's amazing. Some of the common deficiencies now, right now, in the United States, 90% of people are deficient in chromium. And when you think about diabetes and insulin resistance, it's no wonder that's so high. Do you remember last time we met, I talked about Dr. Joel Wallach in the Dead Doctors Don't Lie book. He talked about how they could induce diabetes in animals by depriving them of chromium and vanadium. And then give the chromium and vanadium back, and the blood sugar goes back down to normal levels. So when you think about 90% of Americans are deficient in chromium, it kind of makes sense that this problem is so widespread. 80% are deficient in B6. 75% of the people are deficient in magnesium. 68% in calcium. 57% are deficient in iron. 50% are deficient in vitamin A. And, you know, I could go on. These amounts are based on average minimal requirements. In other words, they're not even getting the ridiculously low amounts of RDAs that we need to keep from getting deficiency diseases. So, again, marginal deficiencies lead to marginal health. So what causes a nutritional deficiency? I don't know if you can see that. So it's factors that destroy vitamins and minerals. So here's some of the things that destroy it. Like, let's look at tobacco. Each cigarette destroys 25 milligrams of vitamin C as well as the B complex, calcium, and phosphorus. Antibiotics destroy the B vitamins and vitamin K. And I'm telling you, the B vitamins do so much. They're like so important. Antacids destroy vitamin A and B complex. Birth control pills are estrogen and destroy all of the entire B complex. Vitamins as well as folic acid, vitamin C and E. Aspirin destroys vitamin C, B, calcium, potassium. And you know, how many of you have heard to take an aspirin a day? So all these people taking an aspirin a day and it's destroying all these vitamins. You know, and you know, how can that be health promoting? I think it's myself rather ridiculous to take an aspirin a day when fish oils will do the same thing and not have the side effects, but that's just me talking, as well as a few hundred nutritionists. Sugar destroys all the nutrients. We kind of talked about that before. Alcohol. Man, alcohol destroys vitamin A, B, D, E, K, choline, and magnesium. Caffeine destroys vitamin B, inositol, biotin, potassium, zinc, calcium, and iron. You know, and I know people take calcium supplements, but if they're drinking coffee and Cokes, that's causing them to lose more than they're taking in. And so, yeah, they still have leg cramps, still have issues because they're losing it faster than they're putting it in. And then cholesterol-lowering drugs destroy vitamin A and CoQ10. So let's just say you're a smoker who's on the pill, who drinks coffee or Cokes, maybe a little alcohol, chlorinated water, takes aspirin every day, a diuretic maybe, and happen to be under a lot of stress. Well, you could see where even if you were eating a healthy diet, you might still need to supplement with vitamins. You know, and then if something seriously goes wrong, you wonder, well, what happened? You know? So if you'll look at your first handout, this medicine table for common medication-induced deficiencies, you can see over here on the left all the medication and what nutrient it destroys. You got a handout? Okay. And it continues on the back here. So if you're taking any of these medicines, you need to check it out. Now, I have this really cool book here called Drug-Induced Nutrient Depletion Handbook. So you can look up the drug that you're taking and it'll tell you what all nutrients it's destroying. And so if you do have to be on a medication for whatever reason, you know, it would behoove you to find out what you're taking and take extra of that those nutrients. I know my dad had, he was on lisinopril or fosinopril, and he started having his taste buds. He couldn't taste food anymore. Well, I knew that loss of sense of taste could be a sign of a zinc deficiency. So we did put him on zinc. It didn't help, because what happened is we did look fosinopril up in the book, and guess what it destroys? Zinc. But it had gone on so long that there wasn't any way to recover it. Once he lost those taste buds, it just we couldn't get it back. And the same thing with Dad about his eyes. You know, if we saw where the cholesterol-lowering drugs deplete the body of vitamin A, well, everybody knows how important vitamin A is for the eyes. You can't help but wonder, you know, did that destroy enough vitamin A that would cause vision problems? it's something to think about, because macular degeneration, when my dad first got it, man, I didn't hardly know anyone that had it. And now it's like common, but so are cholesterol-lowering drugs. They're ubiquitous. Everybody's on one because, boy, they want you to get that cholesterol down. You know how important it is to get that down, and it's not that important to get it down. If you get it too low, you're getting serious problems. Every hormone in your body is made from cholesterol. You've got to have cholesterol. You just don't want it to oxidize. So you take antioxidants, which are your vitamins and minerals. So see how simple this is, really, but yet it doesn't seem to pan out the way we want it to. So you might ask, well, how do these medicines deplete the nutrients? There's about seven different ways that drugs cause you to either excrete. So it could cause you to increase urinary excretion of them. It could block where the nutrient attaches at the cell, within the cell. It can block absorption of the nutrient, or it could bind to it, thereby inactivating it. It could cause it to be used up more rapidly. It could actually destroy the nutrient, or increasing the loss of nutrient in the stool. So these are seven different ways that prescription drugs can cause loss of nutrients. And what's really bad is that the survey showed that an average elderly person is on between 9 to 12 prescription drugs. So you add all those up, and my goodness, I mean, you a one a day isn't going to cut it, folks. So again, the medicines can be a primary cause of nutrient deficiency. When we first bought the store, I tried to study the symptoms of nutrient deficiency. So when someone would come in with symptoms, I'd say, you know, that sounds like a B-complex deficiency. But then later I figured out, well, they're on a certain drug that would destroy those vitamins. So then, you know, so now I kind of quiz, well, let's look at what medicines are you on. And I wonder if a lot of the side effects of drugs are because they're destroying the nutrients and you're having deficiency symptoms of the nutrients, and that's the side effects. So we tend to look at that now instead of just handing them a vitamin. Let's make sure that, you know, the drugs aren't destroying it faster than you're getting it in. So let's see here. Well, you know, we have to also consider other factors that impact our lives. So, again, the kinds of food you eat, this could affect how much vitamins and minerals you're getting. So, are you eating a lot of fresh vegetables and fruits, or are you eating a lot of processed food? You know, there was a sign on a vending machine at a zoo that said, don't feed this food to the animals. It will kill them. But yeah, you know, we're eating it. That's okay. And so how the foods are prepared or processed. You know, are we boiling the food to death and pouring the water off? There went all the vitamins. So how you prepare your foods plays a major role in how much nutrition is going to be left in it. And then was the food stripped in the refining process? You know, again, we talked about white flour being stripped. And the amount of stress you're under, physically, mentally, emotionally, the stress you're under will deplete nutrients. The environment in which you live and work, the contaminants that you're exposed to, your unique inherited biochemical individuality will determine how many you need. Some people, we mentioned earlier about, it wasn't rats, it was something else, that they were quintuplets, they fed them the exact same food, they exercised them the same, they were identical, you know, but yet when they sacrificed them, they, you know, found that the spleens of one would be twice as large, and the heart of one would be twice as large as another. One would be in already having adrenal fatigue. What we're born with depends. Sometimes you might need more vitamin A than someone else. So you have to take that in consideration. And the amount of exercise you do or don't do. The quality of the soil your food was grown in. The type of water you drink. You know, if we're buying a lot of our food from the grocery store, then they pick it ripe. They pick it early before it's really ripe. But if you grow your own food in your garden, you can pick it ripe. It's got a lot more nutrition. So all of these things play a role in how much nutritional value your food has. So we'd know whether to supplement more. You know, the nutrition's not in the soil anymore, honestly. It's just not. They can grow a head of lettuce with their synthetic fertilizers, but there's no nutritional value. I mean, literally, it's just hardly there. And there was a a study done according in the Journal of Applied Nutrition in 1993 published a study that says organically grown food is more nutritious than conventional. And we did cover this last time we talked, but I found this and I thought it was interesting. Over a two-year period, organically and conventionally grown apples, potatoes, pears, wheat, and corn were purchased in the western suburbs of Chicago and analyzed for their mineral content. 4 to 15 samples were taken from each food group. On a per weight basis, average levels of essential minerals were much higher in organically grown versus conventionally grown food. The organically grown food averaged 63% higher in calcium, 78% higher in chromium, 73% higher in iron, 118% higher in magnesium, 178% higher in molybdenum. That's one of those trace minerals that we have to have, but, you know, we only need it in trace amounts. And 60% higher in zinc, and the list goes on. So, you know, the organically raised food averaged 29% lower in mercury than conventionally raised food. So, again, this is really why we have to buy organically grown food or grow it ourselves organically. You know, we're getting more chemicals in our food than we are nutrition, but by the time, you know, chemically treated seed and a chemically treated soil and pesticides, herbicides, and then they add chemicals to it when they process it. I mean, they need to put the RDA of chemicals on our food. I meant to tell you this story last time when we talked about organically grown food, but there used to be a teacher who, I think she taught at the middle school, and she would come in and buy our organically grown rolled oats. And she said every year, every semester in her class, they did an experiment with mealybugs. And she said, if I buy store-bought oats, the mealybugs die. And she can't do her experiment. So she has to buy the organically grown. And I'm like, man, if it's killing the mealybugs. And if no self-respecting bug would get in white flour, you know, then maybe it's because there's a reason. Okay, so and then, you know, we've talked about how nutrients are stripped. In the process of refining wheat into white flour, 80% of its calcium and phosphorus is lost. There are 24 nutrients stripped in the refining process, and they put 4 back and call it enriched. Now, if I stole $100,000 from you and gave you $60 back, would you feel like you were enriched? An experiment by Dr. Roger Williams showed that rats fed only white flour bread died within 6 weeks, while a comparison group of rats fed only whole wheat bread thrived indefinitely. Yeah, that's amazing. So, you know, and there's so many things that can destroy the nutrients before you even get them, let alone all the things we do to destroy the nutrients in the body with drugs and alcohol, what have you, that supplementing with vitamins is a must. I mean, it's just a no-brainer. Now, and here's the other interesting thing. You know, yeah, you will probably never get scurvy or beriberi or any of those diseases. We just don't see those here in America. But there's things called marginal deficiencies or subclinical deficiencies that can cause all kinds of problems. So long before the teeth loosen, the joints and legs become painful, or you get hemorrhages under the skin, as indicated in scurvy, you would have signs of pink toothbrush where your gums bleed when you brush your teeth, or annoying joint aches, or easy bruising. These are subclinical vitamin C deficiencies. Or with the B vitamins, you know, long before pellagra sets in with dermatitis and neuritis and heart failure and muscle wasting, beriberi, you'll have complaints of weakness and fatigue, indigestion, headaches, insomnia, vague fears, you know, that can all show a B vitamin deficiency. But it's not all the way to the point of beriberi, so a doctor won't know you have these. You know, he's not going to know that this is the problem, and because there's a reason for that. The body has a system in place called homeostasis, which means it will do whatever it has to do to keep your blood levels of nutrients at a constant level, because too much or too low will be very dangerous. If you get too low in calcium, you will have tetany and you'll go into convulsions. So the body has systems in place to steal calcium from your bones, your teeth, your jawbone, your muscles, to keep you from getting too low in your calcium. So yeah, a blood test is going to show you're fine, you don't need any calcium, but you've got raging osteoporosis going on. So, and that's the same thing with a lot of every nutrient. Your body will steal from organs, it'll steal from your blood, it'll steal from your muscles, your tissues, to keep that blood level normal. So yeah, people say, well, my blood was checked and I wasn't low in anything. Like, that means nothing to me. Let's look at the symptoms. Do you have any of the symptoms of a deficiency of this vitamin, and go more by that than those blood tests, because it's just not going to work. And then again, you know, the doctors will find nothing wrong with you. Their x-rays or blood tests won't show anything. So let's say it's all in your head. Go home and take two pills and call me tomorrow. And the deal is, too, that it takes sometimes a long time for these marginal deficiencies to finally show up in degenerative diseases. And then by then it's too late. So let's nip it in the bud, you know. And let's talk about the RDAs. The RDAs were initially established during World War II to determine, in a time of possible shortage, what the bare minimum levels of nutrients would be that a healthy person, a healthy male, would need to prevent the deficiency diseases like scurvy and rickets and beriberi. So, you know, this doesn't take into account all the factors that would destroy them. They're just taking into account what's the bare minimum a healthy male needs to prevent scurvy. And so, and then it's adjusted for children or elderly people, but it's like that. Who wants to be on the just barely not having scurvy or beriberi? You know, I want to live in the optimal. I want to live in the white zone. Do what? Shine, yes. We want to shine. So, you know, and if you're doing a lot of these things, smoking, drinking, alcohol, taking medications, or under stress, you're going to destroy them. Major surveys of eating habits in the United States since the 1980s have consistently and repeatedly shown the average American, even those who consider themselves to be eating a well-balanced diet, fail to get the RDAs from their diet. And again, if they can't be manufactured in the body, you've got to supplement with them. Now, I want to talk a little bit about synthetic versus natural vitamins. So in your handout, you have another chart here, this one here. Let's look at that. You know, most chemists don't believe there's any difference between a synthetic vitamin C or a synthetic vitamin A and a natural, because they technically have all the same necessary atoms. But there are actually two differences between natural and synthetic. And one is that the nutrients in nature do not occur alone. They occur with other things. Vitamin C occurs with bioflavonoids. Vitamin E has all of the tocopherols, not just the one, the alpha. It has the D beta, D delta, D gamma. So when you just do a synthetic, you're getting that isolated one, not with the other things that they occur with. And these other things help them in their assimilation. And then the other difference that you can see is proved by chromatography. That's a special photographic process that pictures the differences between the substances in many foods. So this first one here is synthetic vitamin C. You can see that it's just a little dot, you know, a little dot there, top left here, with no squiggly lines. But a natural vitamin C from Acerola berries, you can see it has all these squiggly lines that go out from it. Well, that's the bioflavonoids. But if you're taking a synthetic vitamin C, you're not getting those. You're just getting the little dot. And same in the vitamin E, tocopherol. You can see that the synthetic on the left is just the DL alpha tocopherol. It doesn't have the others with it, whereas the one on the right, coming from wheat germ oil, has all the other delta, beta, gamma tocopherols with it. And on the back, we have vitamin A. And then synthetic B complex. You can just see there is a difference. Now, let's go back to the vitamin C one. It's known that vitamin C consists of 6 parts of carbon, 8 hydrogen, and 6 oxygen. So, see, that's the chemical formulation of vitamin C, or the configuration of the atoms. So vitamin C can be extracted from foods such as citrus or tomatoes, but can be made much cheaper from coal tar products. And basically all of the vitamin C sold today is of the synthetic variety. But are the two the same? Well, let me tell you about an experiment that was done. It was reported in the Russian medical journal called Vitamin Research News. It said mice were fed a deficient diet which is known to produce scurvy. And when it was apparent that all of the mice were suffering from scurvy, they were divided into 2 groups. So the one group got synthetic vitamin C, and the other group got the natural vitamin C. Well, guess which ones lived? The group that was fed on natural vitamin C was completely cured within a short time. Those that were given the synthetic C were not. Another experiment was published in a book called Food and Nutrition concerning vitamin D. Three groups of chicks were fed the same diet, but the first group received no vitamin D at all. The second group got synthetic vitamin D, and the third group got natural vitamin D from cod liver oil. So the chicks receiving no vitamin D, gained 250 grams of weight. The synthetic D gained 346 grams, and the natural D gained 400 grams. Now, here's the most important part of the experiment. In the no vitamin D chicks, 60% died. In the synthetic D group, 50% died. So still losing half. And the natural D, not one death. Another thing that synthetic vitamins don't mention is that the polarity of the synthetic is opposite of the natural and has the opposite effect. It's kind of like shaking your hand in the mirror, or, you know, putting a left-handed glove on a right hand. It's not quite the same. It's the polarity is different. Even though they have the same number of hydrogen atoms or molecules, whatever, they're a mirror image and they're not the exact same thing. It's a false imitation. So another interesting thing worth noting is that two studies were done in the 1940s that proved that these two studies done in the 40s proved that taking synthetic vitamins led to a loss of protection against disease, and especially cancer. In the Finnish study, they gave participants synthetic beta-carotene to smokers to see if it would reduce their chance of lung cancer. But there was a statistically significant loss of protection from lung cancer, stroke, and all other forms of death. But what wasn't told is that they used synthetic beta-carotene. They just said beta-carotene. And so all these smokers, you know, all these studies that were done, oh my gosh, beta-carotene's not helping, no need to take beta-carotene. And they did another study recently doing the same thing. It's been about 15 years ago. We used to sell a lot of beta-carotene. Come on in. We used to sell a lot of beta-carotene because it's so good. I mean, my gosh, it's so good for you. And when that recent study came out showing, they had an increased risk of lung cancer taking beta-carotene, while our beta-carotene cells stopped. What they didn't tell them, though, was they were taking synthetic. The same thing happened with vitamin E and prostate cancer. So they said, vitamin E doesn't reduce the risk. In fact, it increases the risk of prostate cancer. Don't take vitamin E. Well, again, it was synthetic. So the moral of the story, yeah, don't take synthetic vitamins. I mean, gosh, if anything proves that, but they don't tell you that those studies were done on the synthetic. And so, again, our vitamin E cells plummeted, too. And I think about all the people who needed that vitamin E now weren't taking it. And what were going to be the ramifications? All because they really purposely tried to mislead the people. They didn't tell them it was synthetic. And this continues to happen. You know, this room couldn't contain the studies that were done on vitamin E showing how it helps so many things. Heart disease, cancer, prostate problems, all kinds of reproductive problems, women's and men's. And yet, one study comes out, you know, saying vitamin E is not good for prostate cancer. Everybody stops taking vitamin E, but because it was synthetic. And, you know, people say, well, you know, there's no studies that really prove taking vitamins help. So I'm like, well, no, there's about 1.3 million studies on all this. You know, they're just not reading it because it's not in their journals. It's in other journals, or they don't, you know. Doctors have a hard time keeping up with what they keep up with. They don't have time to keep up with everything. They can't physically do it. It's not that they don't want to. They just don't have the time. Not if they're going to treat you, you know. They've got to treat their patients. They don't have time to read everything. So you've got to do it yourself. You've got to learn yourself, educate yourself. Okay, one more real quick study that was so fascinating. A few years ago, some saltwater fish were brought into a London aquarium, but there was only a small amount of seawater there, which was insufficient for the needs of the fish. This was a story that was published in Prevention Magazine many years ago, back when it was a good magazine. Okay, so there wasn't enough seawater for the fish. So one of the curators said he could make seawater as its formula was well known. So he gets his books out, assembles the ingredients, and makes seawater, and they put the fish in it, one fish in it, and it died. So three or four more times, the curator made seawater, being more careful each time to make sure he did it right. And they all died. And so then another curator had a brainstorm and said, hey, why don't we take just the small amount of real seawater that we do have and let's add it to the man-made seawater and see what happens. And they did, and the fish lived. So obviously there's still stuff in there that we don't know about. You know, vitamins... really, to some degree, are still in their infancy. The first one wasn't even fully discovered till 1911 or something, and they didn't even know what it was then. So, phytochemicals, this is even maybe in the last 20 years have we learned about phytochemicals that's in our fruits and vegetables and all the things they do for us. So if you'd been taking a synthetic vitamin, you weren't getting these. But if you were taking a whole food complex, you were getting them just by virtue of the fact that they were in there, even though they didn't know what was in there, just like they don't know what was in that seawater that made the difference of the real versus the synthetic. Okay, so well, where are we at? I really need to take a break. I will, we'll pick this up. Next week, we're going to talk about minerals and phytochemicals, perhaps get in water and enzymes next time. But actually, next time, Becca is going to be talking to us about massage therapy next week in our part one. And then Gail's going to be teaching on the power of words next week on part two. So right now, though, coming up after the break, we have Michael Mile here with us again. He's going to be teaching us about the anatomy of a stronghold. So come back in 10 minutes, and we'll get started with part two. So let's take a break.